Welcome to the IBA Corporate and M&A Law Committee new podcast series. My name is Rodrigo Figueiredo, website officer of the IBA M&A Committee and head of Brazilian firm Matos Filho London office. In the previous podcast, moderated by M&A Committee officer and Wallace managing partner Dovile Borgiene, we have addressed the impacts of the war in Ukraine on M&A. Today, in the second podcast of this series, we'll discuss the pandemic and emergence M&A trends in Latin America. COVID-19 has hit economies hard, and Latin America was no exception. The region's combined gross domestic product contracted around 7% in 2020, having rebounded in the following year by a similar percentage, with inflation averaging around 7% in 2021. The war in Ukraine, on the other hand, has been boosting Latin American exports as a result of commodity shortages caused by the conflict. At the same time, however, that it increases inflation and interest rates. Other challenges are the lack of much-needed constitutional reforms in certain jurisdictions and social inclusion, with GDP growth projections for the region at around 2% for 2022 and 2023. On the political front, the result has been a clear shift towards the left, with Chile, Peru, and Colombia having recently elected left-wing governments, to be possibly followed by Brazil, which is to hold presidential elections in the end of this year. Despite these challenges, and we must remember that Latin America as a region is used to economic crisis and political instability, M&A in the region, even if not immune to the global slowdown trend, which is generally perceived to be happening, still remains significant, promoted by multiple factors such as opportunities in infrastructure, insurance, healthcare, real estate, and technology, and a potential trend of consolidation in the fintech industry. In Brazil, for instance, we have seen a $1 billion acquisition by Brookfield of a property portfolio from BR Properties. We've seen Acti's sale of Equenergia to Equatorial. We've also seen in the region Citigroup's partial exit or announced partial exit from the Mexican market, as well as Mondelez's acquisition of Ricolin, also in Mexico. In Colombia, we've seen an unsolicited tender offer to acquire control over Sura and Nutresa, and the list goes on. To discuss M&A trends in Latin America following the pandemic, today we have invited Lucas Brown, M&A counsel for the Prosus Group. As part of a global team of lawyers which has overseen more than 100 deals in 2021, Lucas covers M&A transactions and investments for the Prosus Group with particular emphasis on Latin America. Prosus is a global consumer internet group and one of the largest technology investors in the world. Businesses in Latin America include classifieds company OLX and payments and fintech initiatives under PayU, as well as Movile, one of Latin America's largest investment groups and growth accelerators for technology companies, which investments include iFood, Latin America's leading food tech company, Simpla, Movile Pay, Zoop, Afterverse, Mensajeros Urbanos, Mova, and A55. Lucas, welcome to our podcast series. As a global consumer internet group and one of the largest technology investors in the world, what factors would you say make Latin America an attractive region to invest and do business in?
I think the main reason why Latin America is an attractive investment destination is that it's a massive region, right? So Latin America as a region is home to approximately 650 million people, which makes it the third largest region in the world, just behind China and India. And that translates into about 8% of the world's population, 5% of global GDP, with Brazil and Mexico representing about half of that number. It's a young population and a growing middle class, which usually means that there's a growing or a promising total addressable market, making it more attractive for investments. Although, as you mentioned, you know, economic growth has been more sluggish in recent years, certainly since the COVID-19 pandemic. And in the eyes of many, the region has not yet lived up to its full potential. Nonetheless, an evidence of how attractive the region is for investments is the number of M&A deals we're seeing. 2021, in particular, was a very strong year for M&A deals. Data from the Transactional Track Record, TTR, shows that there were 3,633 deals representing an aggregate value of approximately 167 $167 billion, with foreign direct investment data also showing an influx of a lot of foreign money, about $134 billion in 2021. That's up from $88 billion in 2020, according to data from UNCTAD. And as you mentioned, I work with Prosus, covering mostly Latin America. Prosus is one of the largest technology investors in the world, so I'm closer to the technology market. And as such, I also see how that market in particular is attractive. There's a high internet penetration in Latin. For instance, Brazil internet penetration rate is about 75%. That compares to 65% in China or 45% in India. And throughout the region, there's a heavy mobile phone usage. In 2020 alone, in Brazil, there were more than 110 million smartphone users. So that's about half of the population using a smartphone and doing transactions on the internet with that phone. Although the numbers of internet penetration and mobile phone usage are high, the e-commerce penetration is still low relative to other places in the world. So e-commerce penetration in Latin is around 10%, and that number doubled since the pandemic, but clearly with a lot of room to grow in the coming years when you compare it to the US or Europe and Asia, right? And technology in particular as an industry still has room to grow, because if you look at how total market cap of technology companies compared to the entire market cap of the economy, that number in LATAM is about 4.5%. Which compares to the U.S. as 45%. So, of course, big tech in the U.S. is a whole different animal from big tech in Latin. But even if you compare to a more similar market like India, there the technology market cap is 15% of the total market cap of the economy. So three times more than in Latin. And, you know, VC investors have been paying close attention to that industry. It has been widely reported that the number of VC-backed investments have been breaking record after record in the last few years. 21 was another record year for VC investments as a subset of overall M&A deals. We've seen more than 650 deals in LATAM with $15 billion in investments. And the number of unicorns, which I think, as everyone knows, is how you call a privately held company that is valued over $1 billion. So the number of those have been doubling basically since 2018. So I think we've seen the first ones in the mid-2000s, and there were four of them in 2018. That number goes to nine in 2019. It goes to 18 in 2020, and then 34 in total in 2021. So almost 100% year-on-year growth on the number of unicorns. So the companies, technology companies are getting more valuable and attracting more investment as a result in the region. And, you know, we've also seen companies actually reaching another maturity level and providing exits to their investors. So a lot of sales and in particular listings in the US. Last year, we saw companies like VTEX, dLocal, and most notably Nubank listing in the US. So if you think about it, you know, a few years ago, it would be impossible to imagine a company, a startup, which was founded just a few years ago, going public in the US. But that's what's happening last year. And with Nubank that I just mentioned, they went public with a $40 billion valuation, right? So if you think about it for a minute, that's almost the same valuation as Itaú, which is the most established financial conglomerate in the region. And would never, a few years ago, be compared or be in the same league as a company like Nubank. But the reality of the market now is that, you know, although Nubank's valuation has been down since the IPO, when they went public last year, it compared in terms of valuation with Itaú, which is just mind-boggling if you compare the scale of the two companies. So, you know, I think it's a very exciting region to be in, with ups and downs, as you mentioned, but definitely, you know, a place where investors are paying close attention And just to finalize, I think all of this data that I mentioned are important to mention. Most of the data comes from a digital transformation report published by Atlantico, a Latin America investment firm. Their report is available online in their website. So if you are interested in knowing more about the region, you should definitely check it out.
It's clear to see that Latin America offers a lot of potential for growth for foreign investors. Now, you're based in the region. From your experience in investing region-wide, what would the main challenges be? We know that the opportunities are there, but also there are important challenges for investing in Latin America. What, in your view, would those be?
Well, although the 2020 and 2021 trends and numbers are very exciting, I mean, one must recognize that Latin America is, you know, it's not an island, right? It's not literally an island. It's not figuratively an island. So it's not immune to the overall economic downturn, which we have seen in the world this year, particularly since the start of the Russia-Ukraine conflict. So there's an overall challenge, which is just a more, just a weaker overall macro context, where investment and capital is more scarce than it used to be in the last few years. And that's combined with, as you mentioned in your intro, growing inflation and slow economic growth throughout the world, and particularly in Latin America. There are challenges, on the other hand, that are more unique and more persistent in Latin. I would first highlight political challenges. I think you also touched on those on your intro briefly. Much like other places in the world, we've seen the rise of populist governments in Latin, from left to right. And I think those, they pose as an actual risk and a very serious one to undermine institutions that are still young if you compare to other places. I think most of the democratic and economic institutions that are now in place in Latin have been developed over the 80s and the 90s. So they're a few decades old. And for young democracies like the ones we have in the region, those threats are very serious. And, you know, they come with inherent legal and regulatory uncertainty that a change of system or change of government always brings. There's also a social unrest that I think you've also mentioned. We've talked about growing inflation, slow economic growth that translates into unemployment and a very high level of economic inequality that has always been the case for Latin, I must say. But things have been actually getting worse in the last few years instead of getting better, as one would hope, particularly during the COVID-19 emergency. There's an overall high level of poverty in the region. So 20% of the total population Latin lives below the poverty line, and about half of the number, or 10% of the total population, lives below what we call the extreme poverty line, which is defined as having less than $2 a day as income. So, you know, 60 million, 65 million people or so living with less than $2 a day, you can imagine that this is a time bomb in terms of social unrest and instability, and a problem that we should definitely address in the coming years. From a business and legal perspective, there are more business environment problems. You know, legally speaking, as a lawyer where I have more experience, I can say that laws in Latin, they're not always clear. Sometimes understanding the way that the law is implemented or applied in practice matters most than what the actual law says, which can be difficult for someone coming from another region. But that's how it works in practice. And particularly as a transactional lawyer, that requires a daily exercise of risk reward and being close to the business team making those decisions, because there's always going to be risk in a place like Latin. A good lawyer here, in my view, is one that can balance risk against reward and help the business team make the right calls. Other known problems of the region that I think are obvious to most listeners are, you know, red tape. There's research showing that the average citizen in Latin spends 5.5 hours in their dealings with public authorities. Latin as a region can be bureaucratic sometimes. You know, things sometimes require in-person requests, signing originals, wet ink documents, apostilles, notaries. So that could slow you down when you are starting your business or doing a transaction in the region. Corruption is another known problem of the region. I think if you look at the corruption perception index, there are countries in Latin, for instance, Argentina, Brazil, Colombia, Mexico, that still rank quite low comparatively to US and Europe, or even other countries like Chile and Uruguay that have a better ranking in this index. But with that said, I must say that there's an effort in addressing corruption, especially in the last few years. Of course, in Brazil, a very known movement is the car wash operation that has translated into some progress, although its legacy is perceived to be mixed in Brazil. I think it started a shockwave throughout Brazil and the Latin America region as a whole, which improved the fight against corruption. And I think this is one where it's also highly dependent on the type of business you have in the region. So if you're doing infrastructure, if you're buying or selling from the government, the touch points and the opportunity for corruption are obviously much higher than a business like the one that I'm more close to as technology investor, where there's virtually no touch points with the government. So you don't perceive corruption as you would in other industries. And I think the last one, just to finalize more broadly, from a cultural perspective, Latin is quite unique. There's still a gender and a racial imbalance when compared to more developed markets like the US and Western Europe. Progress has also been happening in those instances, but we're still lagging behind those countries. And communication styles are different here as well, right? I think Latin people are more nuanced in their communication, sometimes not as straight to the point as our colleagues in the US and Europe. There's a higher value on building trust and the relationship over time. You cannot expect to come in and be trusted from day one here, because just the way that culturally people perceive each other. I think the role of status and hierarchy are still something to be mindful of, especially when you're negotiating deals, knowing your counterparty, building an actual relationship with them.
Very interesting. So definitely a region with lots of opportunities, but also with risks that need to be considered and need to be carefully managed so that they can be mitigated. And perhaps a topic for a next podcast, you know, how to mitigate risks while investing in Latin America. But Lucas, you've mentioned a couple of differences in jurisdictions within Latin America in your answer. Within the Latin American region, how would you describe different jurisdictions in terms of how easy or difficult it is to carry out an M&A transaction, either as a seller or as a buyer?
Well, that's a great question, right? I think until now we've been talking about Latin America as a region, and I think it's a very attractive idea to package into a region. But the reality of the facts is that Latin and the Caribbean is actually made up of 33 different countries. And each country has its own quirks, right? Some countries are more similar to each other, and some are more different, but they're all unique. And I think, you know, local council or colleagues from each of the specific jurisdictions, they can add a lot of value in actually being the people that are on the ground and know how things are conducted or structured in each of the countries. And, you know, from an M&A perspective, what is market standard? What is the usual way you negotiate or you draft a certain provision? Because there's no overall recipe that you can apply to the whole region. I think, as an example, in my experience, Argentina and Brazil are countries that are more buyer-friendly. So sellers would typically agree to higher liability caps for pre-closing liabilities. So when I'm on the buyer side for Brazil and Argentina, I usually push for higher caps, you know, sometimes up to 100% of the purchase price if I can get it, depending on the risk of the underlying asset, of course. If I'm on the seller side in those countries, I know that at some point in the negotiation, I might have to be open to that, and I will have to have a conversation with my counterparts that are not focused on them, only to explain to them, you know, this is how usually market standard works in Brazil, works in Argentina, and we should be comfortable in agreeing to a higher cap than we would in other places. Conversely, I think other countries, you know, Chile and Colombia comes to mind, are places where it's a more seller-friendly market in the sense that it's harder to get higher caps for pre-closing liabilities. And when I've done deals in those countries, you know, we've got to lower percentages, more similar to what I've seen in the US and Europe as market standards. I think, you know, from a regulatory perspective, also a big difference between countries. There's a variance in how ready and how sophisticated governmental authorities are in the region. There are a few that are more well prepared and have already dealt with sophisticated business deals. And, you know, when you talk about, for instance, antitrust filing, some of the authorities are well equipped and ready to review large transactions in an expedite manner. Other regions are less equipped. Sometimes the focus is not that. Sometimes deal activity in the country is not as high, and which means that they are more they usually take more time, and you have to do spend more time interacting and explaining the deal to them. And so there are different degrees of readiness. I've seen that on antitrust. I've seen that on regulatory for telecom and internet. And also, I think data protection is another place where we've seen some countries taking the lead, establishing a very sophisticated regulatory framework for that, while other countries don't have, haven't yet passed laws or have any type of regulation, or the regulation is less detailed or less sophisticated than in other places. So you should, you know, when going to LATAM, you should definitely take a look into the specific market and learn the specifics while keeping in mind
now,
that the region
is
a whole
lot. Now, last question to you, Lucas. In terms of trends for the regions that may affect M&A activity for the remainder of this year, perhaps next year, what would you see?
I see some key trends for the next few years. I think one that I think it's super interesting to think about is the role that China will play in the region. So China, for a few years now already, China is an important actor in the Latin American economy. It's the main trading partner for most of the Latin American countries as a huge commodity buyer, and with also very large infrastructure investments. And definitely from a geopolitical perspective, that brings an interesting question into place, because at the same time where China has been the most important economic force in the last few years, culturally speaking and maybe politically speaking as well, Latin America is much closer to the US and to Western Europe. And now with the conflict in Russia and with, you know, experts and analysts warning of a potential second Cold War coming up, I wonder where the loyalty of Latin America would be politically speaking. Would US and Europe be able to flex their muscles and bring Latin America to their side? Or will the economic and trade ties to China play a larger role? Will it be both, and Latin America will be in this balancing act between one side and the other? As a technology investor, I think that's also fascinating, right? Because we've seen the rise of China tech in the last few years, especially since the pandemic. Companies like TikTok, AliExpress, Shein, they're all coming to Latin very strongly and challenging the local or the US companies that have been here for longer. And they're really becoming household names in the region. We see also Chinese investors coming like Alibaba and Tencent and doing very aggressive investments. Tencent has backed Nubank that I mentioned in the beginning, and also Kintondar, which is a very successful prop tech. So, you know, Chinese capital is definitely here for the long haul. And I think an important trend, we'll see how that capital responds to the U.S. counterattack, and if most of the deals that we will see from M&A will be from, you know, Chinese investors, will be from U.S. investors, will be U.S. companies taking over local companies, or the other way around, right? So I think whatever is still up for grabs, I think will be hardly disputed between these two polarizing forces in the global economy. I think that's one trend. I think the second trend that I see, that I think it's a really interesting one, is around fintech and crypto. So everyone's been talking about fintech, and I think as a subset of the technology market is a very attractive industry. It's been the hottest VC-backed investment destination. 40% of all VC dollars have gone into fintech, and it's not by coincidence, right? I mean, financial services is a huge part of Latin economy, and there's a very tangible opportunity for digitalization and modernization in that sector. For instance, we've seen the Brazilian Central Bank actually start a new initiative called Pix, which is an instant payment system available 24/7, which integrates for free into your banking account. It was launched in November 2020 as a part of Central Bank's effort in Brazil to reduce fees and make banking more accessible to everyone. And it's estimated to have more than 125 million users now in Brazil. So in 1.5 years, they've gone from zero to 125 million. And, you know, here, being here, from day-to-day life, you perceive how Pix is widely adopted, right? You can buy an ice cream in the street and pay with Pix, which, you know, is something that you wouldn't think about doing. So when paying something with your phone, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. And I think as part of the fintech market, we've also seen crypto take a prominent role in Latin. I think a lot of Latin American investors and individual investors, retail investors, have put money into cryptocurrencies. I think also because the local currencies are more unstable, more prone to inflation and other political risks that we discussed. So crypto become widely adopted as an investment mechanism in Latin. And while the market has been crashing for the last few months, I think cryptocurrencies should become more and more popular. And in particularly, the blockchain technology, which serves as the platform for crypto, I think will be more adopted in other use cases in other parts of the economy. So I think blockchain-led innovation is still nascent in Latin, but it's a trend that I would keep an eye out for. The third and final trend that I wanted to briefly mention is agriculture, right? So I think together with financial services, agriculture is the second backbone of the Latin economy. So as you speak, 20% of total GDP in the region is driven by agriculture. And I think this is a market where there's also strong demand for tech-enabled services, including financing, data services, logistics, and precision agriculture. I think the way forward, the world as a whole has a problem with food and food shortage, and that has been made worse with the conflict in Ukraine. And I think Latin is in the heart of any type of solution that we will find for the next few years, with, you know, sustainability being a key driver for agriculture. So I would look out for deals and rise of investment in that area. We have very well established poultry and beef players in the region, and
interesting
I wonder
trends,
how they will
Lucas.
Respond
Let's see how this will play out in
to
the near future. Thank you very much, Lucas. It was a pleasure having you with
trends.
Us today to discuss M&A in Latin America. Thank you all for joining us, and we'll be back soon with another IBA Corporate M&A Law Committee podcast.